Welcome to Sunday Morning. It's a news and public affairs programming service of Cox Media Group. Claire Reynolds is with me today. She's the president and CEO of the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay. I just had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with Laura Lynch. I don't know if you know her from down in Sarasota County. She works with the Crisis Center there as well, domestic violence. But I got to tell you, we are not going to get political about this today. We're not going to talk politics, but I do want to talk about what is going on in our culture. I thought everything that's happened now with Donald Trump, and like I said, we are not going to be political about this. But what did you think when you heard these comments about how he feels that he can treat women? Did you just cringe on a molecular level at that point?
I think many women cringed on that molecular level, as you talk about. You know, the concept of rape culture, whether we like it or not, whether we want to discuss it or not, is still pervasive in our community, in our society. What I am excited about, maybe hopeful about, is the change in the dialogue that has happened, that I've heard happening since the discussions that have gone on. People across this, across society, across the community have really stepped up around that locker room talk. Locker room talk from that perspective is akin to rape culture. And when we say rape culture, it really is the concept that it's okay to do whatever you want to a woman. It's okay to push yourself onto a woman, those kinds of things. And what we're hearing, what we're experiencing is many people, men, women, groups of people saying, no, that's not right. No, that's not what we want to have happen. That's not what we want for our daughters. It's not what we want for our sisters, our wives. It's also not what we want for ourselves. That change in conversation has been very hopeful for us.
Well, because when I heard this, I was literally shocked that someone could have said this even, what was it, 6 years ago, that these comments, when they happened. But even 6 years ago, when I heard some of the things that were said, I have to think to myself, as a politician, wouldn't you, I would hope, be smarter than to say anything like that, whether you thought it was funny or not, but then to come out and try to defend that, where I was shocked. Are we still stuck at that point in our society where we do think this is okay? There's obviously a large amount of people who still think it's all right.
You know, running the Rape Crisis Center that we do here in Hillsborough County, I think we see things as they happen. So we certainly do see places where, you know, there's still the blaming on the victim. Why did you wear that outfit, or why did you go to a bar, or why did you have that second drink? And really, what I'm, again, what I'm hopeful about, though, is that that dialogue is changing. Rape does not occur based upon the clothes that you wear or what you drink or where you are. Rape is done by rapists. And it's time for us to continue to have that dialogue and to give all of us that language about who truly perpetrates this crime. It is not the woman. It is not the male. It's not the one who's the victim that perpetrated this crime. It's the rapist. And being able to change that conversation has been very powerful. And the discussions that we've been having in politics have given us the ability to be able to have those conversations and those discussions. One of the things that I think from our perspective at the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay is that many people don't have the language that they need in order to be able to talk about difficult subjects, whether it's sex, whether it's suicide. So now we've had the opportunity to talk about this at the mainstream level. I mean, when was the last time we heard this phrase, rape culture? You never really heard it.
No.
And now it's becoming a part of the mainstream. I will tell you, I've been so excited to work with the Department of Athletics at USF because, you know, there's all these stereotypes around athletes. What I have learned very recently is that athletes need the language as well. Athletes are seen as leaders on their community campuses. Students come to these athletes looking for help and support. They don't know where to go either. So being able to, again, give them language, give those students that kind of information has been incredibly powerful and I think is ultimately going to be transformative.
Well, and even the word, as you say, rape is one of those words that as soon as you hear it, you almost want to turn around and run in the opposite direction. It's like race. It's one of those things in our country that nobody wants to talk about. What is rape and who is a rapist?
Right. So rape is by definition just forcefully committing a sexual act against somebody that does not consent for that.
And it doesn't have to be intercourse.
It does not have to be intercourse. It is any kind of sexual act that can occur, whether that's, you know, groping, whether that's touching, whether that's, you know, anything that makes a person feel uncomfortable and is by its very nature a sexual act is considered rape.
Now, let me ask you a question, and I almost liken this to canines because we say about them humping each other, for example, that it's not about sex, but it is about power. I have heard that very same thing about rape, that it is not necessarily a sexual act, and I think that confuses people.
I think there's a continuum when you talk about rape. You definitely have the power and control pieces, you know, particularly if you think from a stereotypical perspective of a male on female, you can certainly get that that control issue. I think that there's also places on the continuum where you have individuals that don't think about it as rape, maybe because they feel like the victim didn't say no.
Right.
So it's okay. I think one of the things we're working very hard on is we got to change that language. Mm-hmm. If he or she doesn't say yes, then it is rape.
Well, you know, it's funny when you use the word rape and you said even just unwanted touching. There's people out there who are listening, and I'm not making judgments, but I would say most of the men who say, oh, you've got to be kidding me, really? You know, all I did was touch her behind or something like that. And they think that's okay. I think that there are, like you say, levels in this rape culture of things that we consider acceptable towards women.
Right. Certainly, I would not consider myself personally as the expert of what is considered good touch and bad touch, but I will tell you, for children, that is a dialogue that we have with children from the time that they're very small. What is a good touch and what is a bad touch?
Right.
I think from grown-ups' perspectives, from adults' perspective, we have to put that same filter, that same thought process into place. What's the purpose of me touching somebody's behind? What's the purpose of me touching somebody's breast? What's the purpose of me touching somebody's vaginal area? I mean, it's not a place in our culture that we would generally say is acceptable places to be touched.
Sure.
There's plenty of other places on the body.
Sure.
The hand, the elbow, the shoulder.
The back. You touch somebody on the back.
Exactly. Why is it okay to touch somebody in areas of their body that many people feel are very private?
Right.
And we have been taught as a culture are our private places.
Exactly.
Our private parts.
Exactly.
So I do believe that we do know what's right and what's wrong. We do know. And every time we push those boundaries, we also have to be willing to accept the consequences of those.
Well, that's what I mean when we talk about the culture of rape and the culture of power in this country. I mean, he really did say it in that snippet. I can do this because I'm rich and famous. Is there any way that we are ever going to be able to change that precept in our culture, that those things buy you the ability to act the way that you want to?
I think having these discussions right here is the first step towards that. We've heard it across the country. Women have come out all over and have talked about the experiences they've had in the business culture, in the military culture, just in their day-to-day lives, about how they were treated, the words that were said to them. You know, again, this is an entire culture, starting with sexual harassment, starting with, you know, inappropriate jokes and inappropriate language that morphs itself into touching, that morphs itself into other situations that can feel very sexually uncomfortable for a woman. And for many years, I truly do believe women felt like they had to take it.
Oh, absolutely.
That they didn't have any choices. I think now we're starting to have the dialogue. We're starting to be able to empower not only women. I'm talking a lot about women today, but there are men that are also experiencing this as well.
Right.
I think it's 1 in 4 women, 1 in 6 men have experienced
that
something.
Much.
I believe those statistics are correct, or it may be around domestic violence, but it is unfortunately much more commonplace now. So I believe, just like every other movement we've seen, whether it's, you know, gay marriage, whether it is rights for individuals with AIDS and HIV, the more we talk about it as a society, the more we have these uncomfortable conversations in the break room, in our social environment, the more we're going to be able to, I believe, break through this rape culture.
Well, and I hope that you're right, because I thought that the greatest comment that I heard from some reporter about this was, is not the idea that he used the P word, that's the way we're going to say it, but that the idea behind it was that it was okay for him to do whatever he wanted to do, whether that was sexual or controlling a job or anything, because he had power and money. And I think that, unfortunately, of course, you know, every generation says this, but I think there is a culture now of 20-year-olds and younger who those are the things that they look at, the way that we used to look at integrity and responsibility as the things that they want to strive to. Are you thinking that we're going to be able to change that in young people by having these conversations as well?
Absolutely.
Are you finding young kids are?
I have to. I do. Mm-hmm. I have found that there are many, you know, college-age students.
Right.
And again, because we're starting this language now, mm-hmm. we're hearing it in the high school students.
Right.
We're hearing it with the middle school students. You know, I have a middle schooler. I have an eighth grader Corey, who is hearing these conversations and he's asking the questions. And I think, again, just like anything else, once you give language to something, once you start having the conversations, then I think kids can start forming their own opinions and making their own decisions. It's just like any other movement, whether, again, as you, Mimi, as you mentioned, whether it's a cultural movement, whether it's the race movement, whether it's the gay lesbian movement, you've got to start younger and younger normalizing the discussions. Really, as a parent, you know, talking to your child about what do you as a family accept? What are your norms, values, and principles?
Mm-hmm.
And then being able to allow your child to learn and experience and grow and take their ideas and move them forward into the world. Is it a little Pollyannish?
Mm-mm.
Maybe.
Right.
I will give myself that. But we've never had this level of opportunity to have this kind of dialogue with our children before. And so I appreciate that.
You mentioned the children. I had some women in here the other day that had started a movement in the Carrollwood area where they're getting together, just they actually know each other because their kids go to school together, talking about race, and they're bringing all kinds of people just, and they meet at each other's house. And that's one of the things that they said I thought was very interesting, is not only to be not prejudiced, to be anti-prejudice, not just bullying, but standing up for a child that's being bullied.
Absolutely.
How do we come to the rescue, I hate to use that word, but how do we come to somebody, we see this is happening, how do young women stand up without, because everybody wants to be cool and accepted, how do we stand up to that, and what are the things that we need to be saying?
Those are great questions. I think that there are many types of bystander interventions that we now have available in the community. Things like our Green Dot program that we do at the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay.
And Tell me about that.
Green Dot is really, really interesting because it provides bystanders, just innocent bystanders, with ways of which they can stop violence from happening without getting in the middle of it.
Right.
So, for instance, you see two individuals maybe fighting. They're escalating. You're concerned that there might be some physical violence that's going to happen. Maybe you walk. Maybe you go, "Hey, did you see there's a fire going on?"
Oh.
Something that stops that just that instant moment in time that can help to de-escalate the situation.
What a great idea!
Yeah. So it's been revolutionary. We started this in the Ybor community. We're working to expand that throughout. But again, the idea was to prevent violence. So the Green Dot Initiative is one example of that. I think for students, we do a lot of bullying prevention. We give kids a lot of information about that. Those same skill sets will also work in other situations.
Because it is kind of a bullying situation.
It's absolutely a bullying situation. Yeah. You know, we talked about power and control before. Mm-hmm. What is really power and control? It's bullying. I mean, if you break it down into its most granular form.
Yeah.
So I believe that those kinds of things will really, really be helpful. I also want to say that from what we're seeing, too, is the change in the law enforcement around these issues. State Attorney's Office, Public Defenders, Chief of Police, all recognizing that sexual assault is caused by a rapist.
Right.
And helping, using new techniques, trauma-informed interviewing, for instance, that's happening in four communities across the state, one in Clearwater, as a matter of fact, that's changing how we're even doing interviewing with victims.
Hmm.
Understanding the incredible trauma that happens
right.
when a sexual assault occurs. And what happens with trauma? Well, you know, victims of trauma don't necessarily think in linear patterns. So instead of saying, okay, tell me what happened next, saying, what else happened to you during that situation?
I see.
So that you can actually create these stories that you can then put together over time.
I see.
So it's changing that culture. You know, I think one of the recent things that we've heard from police chiefs, you know, their strategy is to engage key enablers of sexual assault across America. And that is just very, very powerful. So on the one hand, you do have, from a political perspective, one individual.
Mm-hmm.
But on the broader sense, I really think it has given voice to something that has needed to be discussed for such a long time.
And who knew that he was going to come to our rescue in that way?
Who knew?
He's already changing America for the better.
Yes, he is. That's what we're going to go with.
Yeah, that's what we're going to go with on this. So if we're in a situation or we know somebody who's in a situation, what are now the protocols? I mean, do you go right to HR if you experience it in the workplace? What do you do? And what are some of the language that we want to use so that we make ourselves very clear as to what happened?
You know, I would say that certainly from a workplace perspective, human resources is absolutely the top place to start. I would certainly go to your human resource specialist and get some advice. You know, if you're not ready to say, you know, hey, somebody's done X, Y, and Z, and you just want to talk it through, I think HR professionals have really been the ones to embrace this protection for employees. And, you know, certainly have federal law around it, there's state law around it, but I also believe there's a cultural shift around HR. So certainly that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also encourage individuals that are just, maybe they just need to help get their head around what's going on. Utilize the resources in the community. And I will plug our 211 information and referral line that's available 24 hours a day. 211's available across the community, state, country. Those are good places to start, particularly if you're not ready to put names and faces and details, but you really need somebody to help be your soundboard, kind of help you think things through. I would certainly utilize 211 for that.
Yeah, I was going to mention that you guys have a plethora of information and resources there.
Absolutely.
Even if you don't know what you're looking for.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're struggling. You're struggling with, unfortunately, many victims are still struggling with the stigma of guilt, of they somehow caused this on themselves, you know, all of these other things on top of fear of retribution, fear
right.
of losing their jobs,
right.
Particularly for individuals that are in situations where their work may be jeopardized. I'm certainly thinking about people in different occupations, you know, massage parlors or sometimes in the adult
right.
entertainment industry. They have rights as well. There's no victimization that should ever occur, no matter what kind of job you do in our community.
Well, and I think it's wonderful that you bring that up. I was talking to Charlie Justice the other day about his human trafficking initiatives, and that's one of the places that they're targeting are these massage parlors and clubs, because there is a idea that it's okay because of what these people do for a living to treat them as lesser human beings.
I will tell you that I was at a Hillsborough County Board of County Commission meeting last Wednesday in support of an increased ordinance around signage for victims of human
right.
trafficking. It was interesting, and I actually had an opportunity to speak to the code enforcer who talked about the fact that it was like a postage size sign that was being put up.
Right.
He was like, well, this is ridiculous. Let's standardize this. Let's make this at least, I believe it's like 10 by 13,
mm-hmm.
something that people can read. It's these small little things. It's county commissions standing up and saying, we're not going to tolerate the exploitation and the abuse of people working in any industry across
mm-hmm.
our community, whether it's working at Publix, whether it's working at Jabil, or it's working in an adult entertainment industry. We all have rights. We all should be treated as human beings and not less than that because of the work that we do.
Well, and not only that, but the sex that we are. And I know that we're close in age that we came up through a time that you put up with a lot of that because, as you say, there was that fear of retribution. I actually got told early in my career that if I didn't acquiesce to the requests that were being asked of me, that I would never see the light of day again. In other words, I would work from midnight to six on the air and never, I quit that job. But, you know, now in retrospect, you couldn't get away, or I say you couldn't get away, but here's a guy who's president of the United States saying it's okay to grab women in an inappropriate way because he can.
I think the only thing we can do is continue to give voice and give language and empower younger women, younger men, mm-hmm. that this is not behavior that's going to be tolerated.
Right.
That is absolutely not. And it's tough to be powerful, and it's tough to use your voice.
Right.
And developing those support mechanisms to support those folks when they do come out and say, no,
right,
I'm not going to tolerate this behavior. You're not going to do this to me. I'm not giving you the power to hurt me anymore, mm-hmm. whether that's verbally, whether that's physically.
Right.
You've got to be empowered to do that. It takes a lot of emotional strength to be able to do that.
Right.
And so having those support mechanisms, being able to make sure that the people around you believe you, will support you, will be there no matter how this, you know, plays out, mm-hmm. that's the other key to this. So it's not just about empowering the victim. It's also empowering the support group to be strong enough to continue to support that individual even when it's not popular. Again, it's all around that bullying culture. It's the same language that we give kids around bullying.
Right.
About how you have to support, how you don't be a part of the crowd. You have to stand
right.
up. We have to do the same thing around sexual assault and this rape culture.
Do you go into high schools or other groups where you do presentations about this that maybe somebody who's listening this morning couldn't think, well, maybe I'd like you to come and talk to my Girl Scout troop or something?
We can certainly do that from the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay. We partner with the Hillsborough County Public Schools
oh,
on
great.
The Green Dot Initiative and other violence prevention initiatives mm-hmm. in the community. So certainly, you know, anybody can call us at 211
okay.
if they want more information about the types of programming we offer.
Okay, so 211 is the way to get there by telephone. What about on the net? Do you have a website?
Yes, it's crisiscenter.com. Mm-hmm. Again, available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can find out all sorts of information about the services that we offer at the Crisis Center, because we offer a variety of services from that 211, which is really and truly the community's gateway to finding help, hope, and healing. We are the certified rape crisis center in the community. So if someone has been a victim of sexual assault, whether it has just happened, you know, 20 hours ago, or it happened 20 years ago.
Really?
There are services and supports available to help those individuals. We also have a trauma counseling program, because you and I, we've had this great conversation and you feel very energized.
Right.
This is a traumatic thing that we're talking about, and that trauma mm-hmm. will stick with individuals and will...
That's why you say if it was 20 years ago, still come forward.
Absolutely, because you will be surprised how, you know, when you think back on some of the decisions, some of the things that you've done across your life, it was really rooted in that trauma
wow.
that was never treated.
Right.
Treated trauma can be incredibly powerful.
You do Facebook? You do...
We do, absolutely. All the social media. So Facebook, Twitter...
Yeah.
All of the above, Instagram, LinkedIn, all of the above, you can get to us. You know, you can reach out to us. Let us know what you're thinking, how you're feeling. And please know that the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay is always going to be available to you. Our mission is to ensure that no one in our community has to face a crisis alone. And we take that incredibly seriously.
I know you do.
So please, don't hesitate. Reach out and call us.
Thank you for taking the time to inform us this morning. This is a great conversation and timely.
Mimi, thank you for the opportunity so very much, and for giving voice to a topic that many folks are just now becoming more comfortable with discussing. So thank you for giving us that audience.
Thank you for joining us on Sunday morning, a news and public affairs programming service of Cox Media Group. Enjoy the rest of your day.